Hi, my name is Elle Billing. I am a chronically ill queer femme, and I'm tired. I'm here this episode and every episode to dig at the roots of our collective fatigue, explore ways to direct our care in compassionate and sustainable ways, and harness creative expression to heal ourselves and our world. And welcome to HURF, Radical Care in a Late Capitalist Techscape. My guest today is Max Kringen. Max Kringen is the founder and owner of Tellwell Story Co., a creative studio that specializes in branding, design, and web services. Over the past decade, Max has led the company from its inception to a successful and respected firm, working with a diverse range of clients, from small nonprofits to Fortune 100 companies across the country. His entrepreneurial spirit and passion for storytelling have been the driving force behind Tellwell's growth and success. Max's approach to business is characterized by a deep commitment to his team and clients, valuing relationships and the power of storytelling in creating impactful and meaningful connections. Under his leadership, Tellwell has become known for its story-focused, empowering, and service-oriented approach, prioritizing content-first, consistency, user-centric design, and integrated creativity. Max's vision for Tellwell is not just about business success, but also about making a positive difference in the world through the art of storytelling. I'm excited to have Max on the podcast today. Welcome. Hi, Max. Welcome to HURF.
Hi, Elle. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm so excited to see you. It's great to have you here. I recorded on your podcast last week, and then I said, hey, do you want to be on my podcast? And you said, heck yeah.
Heck yeah, I do.
And that's basically how the conversation went. So we have now seen each other twice in 2 weeks after not seeing each other for almost 20 years. So life is good.
Life is really good. It is so fun to like see you, catch up a little bit. It's actually been really fun to almost catch up with you through your podcast, because I would say like I've learned so much about your life over the last 20 years just by the work that you've been doing on your podcast.
Oh, well, thank you. It's certainly been like a lot has happened in 20 years. So we went to high school together. We were in different years, but we have known each other since elementary school, essentially.
Yep.
Went to the same school. I graduated. Then my sister graduated. Then you graduated. And then I just disappeared.
Yeah, you really did.
Yeah. And like the last time you saw me, I was either probably engaged to or almost married to my high school sweetheart. And things are very different now.
Yeah. Very, very different now.
Very different now.
And that's what I kind of love about this story of even how we came back together, because I think we will talk about it at some point, but the podcast that you came on was one that we create here at Tellwell, which is Pride Stories, which is sharing stories of LGBTQIA+ peoples. And I was like so surprised and so delighted when I saw a Danielle L. Billing, and I was like,
I know them.
I know them. Okay. Let me like read through this real quick. I was like, oh, this is going to be so fun. And so that was a really fun moment, but we never got to connect through our queer journeys, really.
No, not at all. I mean, and you can tell the story on my podcast that you told on yours too. When we get a little bit further down or right now about my sister. I actually talked to her about that on the phone today.
Did she remember it?
Kind of.
Or did she just have so many coming out conversations with all of her friends that she didn't even remember?
We have so many queer friends. She and I have fielded many of those conversations. I wonder why.
Comfortability.
Yeah.
You're very welcoming though, and your sister's always been very welcoming.
She said too. I just was standing in front of so many closets, just waiting, just protecting people. Like at some point, you have to open the door and say, "Can somebody come out? There's just too many to keep track of." That's what she said today, you like know, when we were on the phone. She's like, "Is that really this?" She's like, "Is that really the story Max tells people?"
Honestly, I think that was maybe the first time that I've told that story. Like, I would say, Katie in my circles don't really like What's that when they oversect?
The Venn diagram. They don't overlap like a Venn diagram.
Yeah, they
anymore.
Don't overlap a ton anymore. Like they definitely used to, but you know, in the 20 years that we've been out of school, not so much anymore.
I guess you have to tell the story now. We've like teased it. We can get to the questions in a minute.
Yeah, I feel like if I don't get it perfect now, you're going to be like, that wasn't factually accurate. But I wasn't there. So I remember, like, I was driving home and I had Katie on the phone and we were talking about like a relationship thing. I may have been talking about a girl thing. And I finally just like came out and I was like, and I'm gay. And she's like, well, yeah, duh. And but not in like a minimizing way, but just like I'm very, very ready for you to come out. And that is going to butcher the story. I should just like grab that section and like bring it back because now I'm trying desperately to remember it. And
You had said that you were talking about girl stuff. And then she was like, Max, honey, you know, you're gay, right?
Yeah.
Like in the very Katie, like loving, but very factual, like we need to talk about this. Like, because the reason you're having girl problems, that's a very Katie thing.
Like what's funny is I remember like the where I was. Because I was on like 42nd Street in Fargo and like driving my car that I had in college, which was like a Pontiac Grand Prix and it was silver. And I remember this, like, I don't know why, like I can remember like all of the things around it, but like the actual conversation seems, what just happened?
There was just a noise in the bathroom. Oh. And I was like, what?
Nan is coming through the door. She misses me.
She probably does. I don't know. I mean, why wouldn't she?
Why wouldn't she? Absolutely.
After we recorded your podcast, I told my dad about it. And he was like, oh, yeah, Max used to come over all the time. He was always so much fun.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah.
That's so sweet.
And then he asked about your parents. And he was like, oh, I should catch up with them. Yeah.
But isn't that the Midwest thing to do? Is like, how are you? How are your parents?
How are your parents?
And it's just like, oh, they're the same as they always have been. It was very sweet. I actually just got off the phone with John, and I got a call from like the Department of Health for the state of North Dakota, and she's like, hi, so we're doing this program. You had applied for this program. It was like another benefit that we can offer here at Tellwell. Mm-hmm. And we had applied for this program, but John was like the person, like the contact person, because he's our controller here at Tellwell after he retired. And she's like, yeah, he hung up he said, please take me off your list. This is spam. And take me off your list and never call again. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And she's like, it's fine. I feel like my dad would have done the same thing. And I was like, dang it. So that's how John is today.
Yeah. Yeah. I live with my parents, right? And I screen calls for them a lot. I think I'm the John in that scenario. When people ask for my parents, I'm like, are you scamming seniors for money? Because that I will not abide that. Like, because there have been times where, yes, they are scammers and they are being really terrible. And I'm like, excuse me. Like, do you enjoy your life? Like, are you happy with your life right now? Like, do you really like calling people and threatening them? Like, are you okay with this? And this guy's like, honey, get a hold of yourself. And I'm like, did you just call me honey?
Oh, hell no.
He's like, we were told that that helps calm people down. I was like, no, it fills me with rage when strange men call me honey.
Yeah, whoever gave you that information was very mistaken. You know, that makes those TikTok videos make a whole lot more sense. Like when they catch the scammers, and then they like zoom in on them, and I don't know how they have access to their cameras. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Anyway, so
yeah. So anyway, that's how life is. This is what happens when you put two speech kids in front of a microphone.
So I know we had mentioned like talking about speech a little bit, and I just had this like wild it feels wild to me that I'm gonna go and do it because I've said no for so many years.
Are you judging this weekend?
Are you judging this weekend?
Yes!
Oh my God.
Yeah, I've been judging all season.
Oh my God. So I'm going to judge regional speech this weekend.
Okay. So we'll get to catch up. We don't have to like worry about getting coffee. We could just go eat donuts in the judge's lounge.
God, not good donuts. Like really not like stale donuts.
No, right? They might be good.
They might be good?
They might be sandy.
I was going to say, when I first started judging speech, like, well, it would have been right after I graduated. Mm-hmm. So like 15, 17 years ago.
Well, one of the tournament managers is our old coach.
Yes. Anyway, I'm very excited. And okay, well, there we go.
So we now were speech we have, kids together. That's how we know each other. Kids. Yeah.
Lots of time in the speech box.
Yeah. So we reconnected for your podcast, as you mentioned, which is Pride Stories. And like you said, during the process, we realized like we hadn't ever shared our coming out stories, which is why you were so excited to have me on your podcast. And then, yeah, we talked a lot about the 90s and early 2000s in small town North Dakota. And, you know, neither of us came out in high school. I started to when I was 19, but like didn't come out to the rest of my family till I was like 31 and divorced. But you have, I mean, Pride Stories is a project of Tellwell, which is your mm-hmm. business. So can you share a bit about like that podcast, but like also your story and why Tellwell decided to do Pride Stories in our community?
Yeah.
And absolutely. Why that's important to you?
Yeah. So Tellwell has been, we've called ourselves a story-based marketing agency almost since the beginning. Mm-hmm. Way before like marketing agencies and creative studios started talking about story and sharing your story and all of that jazz. Like, I don't want to say like before it was cool, but we've really been talking about the power of story to connect communities for a long time. And I think one of the things that happened was as we've had different people here at Tellwell, we've had kind of different like ebbs and flows. And, you know, I would say early on, we were very afraid of like some of our more conservative clients being like, oh, well, wait a second. We don't want to work with those homos. And unfortunately, we are in Fargo. Mm-hmm. And I shouldn't say unfortunately, I love Fargo.
There is at least the benefit that Fargo is a slightly more liberal pocket than mm-hmm. the rest of the state.
Absolutely.
But it's still North Dakota.
Right. Yeah. And a lot of the businesses, the folks that we rely on to do work with, a lot of those business leaders are fairly conservative.
Like Doug Burgum. Religious.
Like Doug Burgum.
I mean, the governor of, like, for people who don't know who that is, the governor of the state of North Dakota got his start as a business person in Fargo.
Yeah.
And he owns a lot of stuff in town.
And, you know, really, Doug and Kilbourne Group is how we started with video at Tellwell, which is now like some of the most amazing work that we do. And like what's so frustrating, side tangent, what's so mm-hmm. frustrating to me about.
Yeah, Doug, sorry, I shouldn't like risk your client relationships by calling out the governor.
No, they're not a client anymore. And okay. That's okay. But like one thing that's so frustrating is I remember when there was an event about healthcare technology. And at the time I worked at a tech startup downtown Fargo. And so I was sitting in the crowd and he on the stage in front of everybody was like, you know, one of the reasons that we need to be more open to gay marriage is because there's a whole segment of the population of really talented people that don't feel comfortable working here. And so we are missing out on like the ability to make our community more rich, as well as losing out on really significant talent that could be coming to our state and to our town. And I was like, yeah, Doug, like that was so empowering. And I was just like, holy shit, like this wildly successful person is saying this in front of a room of conservative, like North Dakotans and Midwesterners, and like, good for you. And thank you for doing that. And so it is like I have a really hard time with the chasm that has happened between like Doug, the objective business person who recognized like the value of our LGBTQIA plus like brothers and sisters and others mm-hmm. to what it is today, which is like a shell of that. And I don't mean this to like
the compromises he had to make to stay, to get into and to stay in office.
Yeah. And this might be naive of me, but I really do believe that that like first person is still in there. And I hope because of like, frankly, the interactions that I've had with his staff and his chief of staff is one of my friends from college. And I know he doesn't have those beliefs. And so it's really hard for me to like bridge that. But
yeah,
as we kind of come back to pride stories, we were really struggling for a while about like, how do we carve out our identity and talk about what we believe in, especially when, you know, some of our creatives were on the more, I would say like religious side, but like not necessarily spiritual, but religious. And so struggled with that for a while. And what's interesting, it wasn't until 3 years ago, almost 4 years ago, my now business partner, Duncan, shared a video from the Trevor Project. Mm-hmm. And the Trevor Project has this like basically coming out stories, and it's a beautiful series. And he's like, why don't we do this? And Duncan, for understanding, is straight. He's married. He has a 7-month-old baby, a beautiful baby boy. And it just boggled my mind that like this straight bro-y, kind of bro-y, guy is coming in and saying like, we should do this. And so we started to dig into it a little bit more. And like, then I finally got to meet like some of the rest of his family. And he started to share about like that relationship. And, you know, he has a twin brother. They look identical. They're not quite identical because his twin brother is gay. He's married to a lovely gentleman, and his sibling is queer. And so like he comes from this very open and welcoming family, which was so great. So he brought up this idea. And so it actually started as a video series. And so we have a beautiful video series where we had 11 brave storytellers that came into our studio, and we had our studio all decorated, and we had like these rainbow lights on. And so everybody got a different color. And we just asked people to kind of share their story of pride. And it was incredibly powerful. Mm-hmm. And we released those over the next year. And the thing that I realized as they were coming out was, while they were incredible and beautiful, and we won all kinds of awards for them, which was great, as much as anything, they were incredibly well received by the community. And the community was so excited about them. And that's really what told us, like, double down on that. Like, tell people what you believe in. And those folks that don't want to associate with you, let them go their own way. But there's going to be a whole lot more people that probably come your way because you're being your more authentic self.
Yes. Like, the people who don't want to do business with you because you're making pride story videos, you don't want their business anyway.
Exactly.
Like, you don't want to have to tiptoe around them.
You know, it's challenging because we were working with a podcast editor pretty recently, and we were going to move our podcast, that they were going to edit our Pride Stories podcast. And we got this very strange message back that was like, hey, so we don't have capacity anymore. Sorry. And we're like, oh, okay. That's weird. But then I saw them advertising for like, for business on their LinkedIn. So I just reached out. And they're like, actually, it just doesn't align with my religious values, my good Christian values of, and I was like, oh, okay.
Then just say that.
Just say that then. Say it the first time, right? Don't lie about it, because I feel like that is maybe, you know, explicitly written.
Yeah, like, you know. Yeah.
And there's like a do not, like.
Do not lie.
Do not pass go. But beyond that, so Pride Stories, the podcast, actually came from a bit of a realization. It was one of those like midnight realizations where you kind of sit up and you're like, almost.
I have those all the time.
Almost every. They're either the worst or the best, especially if you can remember them the next day.
That's why I keep a notebook next to my bed.
Smart. I don't know what happened to it because sometimes I like also keep like my glass of water there and I just like swing and, you know, then you're really up. So, But what I realized, and this is no criticism to the original project, but like it was a lot of cis white men and women talking about their gay stories, their lesbian stories.
Yep.
And so there was very little actual representation of who I lovingly refer to as the Alphabet Mafia, right? Mm-hmm. So Pride Stories, the podcast, is as much as anything a way to like bring down the production time just a little bit to get as many more stories as we can. Mm-hmm. So that's where Pride Stories, the podcast, came from. And again, thank you for being on it.
Yeah, you're welcome. You put out a call. I don't even know if it was on Instagram or your personal Facebook or what.
Probably both.
Yeah, probably both. I was like, oh, yeah. I should do that. And, you know, having my own podcast too, like one of the things that I also like about doing a podcast versus some other form of media is that you can reach other people who you may not be able to get to come into a studio. You know, I have a friend in Michigan who is a professor of social work, and they are chronically ill. They're immunocompromised. Now they now have long COVID, and they've been able to maintain their teaching duties because they can work remotely. They don't have to go into the office anymore. And the isolation is really difficult for them emotionally, but they're also able to keep themselves safe.
Yeah.
You know, and so being able to do remote recording like we're doing right now opens up a level of accessibility that I think a lot of people don't necessarily think about too.
Yeah.
That was something we were talking about before we hit record too, is that I'm trying to set up an appointment with a woman who is blind. And the software that I use, that we're using right now to record, isn't accessible to the accessibility software that a lot of blind people use for accessing computer software. None of the buttons are labeled for screen readers. And so we need to find an alternative for recording. And I think that is really frustrating.
It's frustrating because there's ways, not terribly difficult ways, to fix those things. One of my leadership coaches recently, she was a designer on the original Google Maps. Mm-hmm. And she's incredible, just like a badass, like design leader, manager. And I was sharing with her a little bit of frustration because like we had a client that was being particularly difficult about, and forgive me, because this was like, frankly, before I understood how some of these like screen readers mm-hmm. worked and what that accessibility looks like. But I was getting a little bit frustrated because it was compromising our design, mm-hmm. right? Compromising our color palette.
Yeah.
I say that now dripping with sarcasm. And a client was like, we were getting frustrated with a client because they were doing that. And what she said to me was, Max, when you design for accessibility, everybody wins.
Yes.
Right? And it's not just the people who have, you know, if you think about the bell curve, it's not just the people on one end or the other, but like everybody actually wins with that. And whether that be proper contrast, proper sizing, alt tags on your photos, right? Like mm-hmm. there is a business benefit to having alt tags on your photos in addition to empowering people with visual impairments to understand what that page is and like what the purpose of it is and those types of things.
Yeah, it's good for your SEO.
It's good for SEO, right? Like there's a business case to also be accessible. And it shouldn't just be when people are being sued that they're thinking about accessibility and making their stories accessible to as wide of an audience as they can.
Right. You know, I worked at a school for the deaf and blind. And so we talked about accessibility of our stuff all the time, you know, captions on videos, verbal descriptions on videos, making sure that our bulletin boards had braille descriptions of what was visually on the bulletin board, things like that, interpreters available at all events. And so accessibility was just built into everything. But I had a hard time starting out with visual descriptions of my photos. I just didn't know where to start. It's like, how do you describe a photo? I don't know. That's why I'm using Instagram, because I'm a visual artist. Like I don't know how to. So I hired somebody for a while to do my descriptions for me, just to get over that hump, because I just didn't know. I was like, I'll hire somebody to do it. Then I'll have like a bank of descriptions, and that'll like at least get my momentum going. And it was another disabled person that I hired to do it. And I think the key there is like, Tellwell did Pride Stories, the video series, and Pride Stories, the podcast. And, you know, you led with your heart and you led with your ethics because you're gay. Duncan has gay and queer family members. And it's because that sensibility is already built into your company, because you have diverse members of your business. And when you have people who are disabled who work in a business or in a school or in a system, accessibility is more at the forefront, or that type of diversity is already like part of the thinking of the organization because the people who are doing it are there. And when you have a startup, one of the problems of startup culture is, I mean, things that they ran into with like Lyft and Uber is that there were no disabled people who worked for the startup. And so the inaccessibility of people's individual cars versus, you know, taxis or municipal transportation or things like that, no one was thinking about, well, what happens if there's a wheelchair user who wants to use Uber? Because, well, no one thinks about those things if they don't have to.
So break that down. Like, where that actually like gets to the foundation of that is leading with empathy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And when you've experienced those types of things and those types of, you know, whether you've been discriminated against because of ability or discriminated against because of who you love or discriminated against because of your gender.
Mm-hmm.
When you get to experience those, suddenly it doesn't matter necessarily what the otherism is.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've experienced it in any way. In my case, like I'm a cisgender white man. I can code switch like that, right? Like I can get up in front of that group of conservative North Dakotans and be like, well, hi friends, my name's Max and I love tater tot hot dish, and like get the crowd going.
Tater tot hot dish is really good though.
Tater tot hot dish is freaking delicious. But like I have that ability to do it. And so I actually see it as a, not just an opportunity, but like an obligation,
mm-hmm,
to bring other folks along with me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I think about Pride Stories, the podcast, even more specifically. One of the things I've really struggled with is trying to share the stories of like our transgender brother and sisters, because I would say like in a very similar way to how maybe like a straight person can't put themselves in the place of a gay person to be like, I just don't understand how you can be attracted to dudes, or I just cannot understand how you would be attracted to women. I was struggling with that. Mm-hmm. And what I found so fascinating is, you know, I'm 10, 12 interviews into Pride Stories, the podcast. And throughout that, I think I've had four or so folks that identify as transgender. And
mm-hmm,
I get it now. Right? Like, but it is through that opening of a dialogue and saying like, hey, let me invite you into this conversation, invite you into sharing your story. And I think that there needs to be more of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how we force that upon people to like, especially people that haven't gotten to experience discrimination in various ways, how we encourage them to invite those conversations, but it's really important.
Mm-hmm. So what does it mean to you to tell a story well?
As I think about telling a story, I actually sometimes reframe it. And I oftentimes talk about sharing a story versus telling a story.
Tell Well sounds better as the brand name.
It does.
It just rolls off the tongue. But no, yeah. So yeah, sharing a story well.
Share well. But I love to share stories because stories have this ability to connect seemingly disparate people.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that you're always trying to do within story, if you think about like almost any of the major storytelling frameworks, one of the primary ones that we use is the hero's journey,
mm-hmm,
where you always want to position yourself as the guide to let whoever you're talking to be the hero, and you're trying to help them get to their heroic ending. And so what we love to do is we really love to position nonprofits, small businesses, big businesses as the guide, so that way whoever they're serving can be positioned as the hero. I think one of the most interesting things about how to tell a story well is there are kind of three main things that you really have to identify. What is the problem, right? Mm-hmm. And we like to go a little bit deeper. We like to talk about like, what is the external problem? Like, what is the overt problem? What is the internal problem? And then what's the philosophical problem that happens with it? And so if you think about that, if we use the example, we'll just do this in real time. If you think about one of your students, what is the external problem of one of your students who might be deaf?
They're behind in reading. That's the one that I ran into the most often, probably. At least, that's or great. That parents would identify immediately. They're behind in reading.
They're behind in reading. The internal challenge is, how does it make them feel?
Exactly. Yes.
And so how did it make them feel?
Sometimes helpless, frustrated. Sometimes they lacked confidence, lacked motivation.
They felt behind.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. The philosophical challenge is, it's just plain wrong that they feel like that, because in this case, Ms. Billing is here to teach you how to read, right?
Yeah.
And so really identifying.
And and philosophically, there's nothing inherently wrong with them, and we don't need to base our judgments of kids on their academic proficiency. So sorry, amen. I just gotta jump in there.
Amen.
Sorry.
Very true. Very true. And then really we go into
can tell why I burned out.
Well, I mean,
lots of late nights philosophizing.
That's a really good point, though. And it's not really one that we run into in the work that we do, right? Like we as we try to take a big story and boil it down, I used to use the analogy of take Coca-Cola and get rid of all the water. What are you left with? Just the syrupy goodness, which also the syrup of Coca-Cola, I can't imagine actually is good at all. Anyway.
I used to change out the syrup on the pop machines at work, and it's
at the DQ?
Yeah, at the DQ.
But when you do that, part of what our response, not our responsibility, but part of what we have to do in that is we have to boil the story down in a way that ignites new conversation, mm-hmm. right? What we're trying to do is we're trying to be step one of inviting somebody into a story. And so a lot of times, like even what you just said about there's nothing inherently wrong, and we shouldn't be passing judgment on children because of their lack of ability to read. Yeah. Right? And 100% agree.
When I went to grad school, the entire thrust of my master's program was, we shouldn't be using a deficit model in the way we approach bilingual deaf education and teaching kids to read. We need to base it on their strengths.
Yes, absolutely. And part of the challenge that we sometimes run into is we don't get to go as deep in story as we want to.
So, because marketing doesn't, you don't have that much time.
You don't have that much time, and you're getting five. I think the latest statistic is the average person gets inundated with 5,000 marketing messages on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even as we're in this call right now, in this safe space, there are a dozen logos in front of me at different times. Right.
Yeah, if I look at my computer right now, there's the one for Zencaster, there's Google Chrome, mm-hmm. there's the one for Windows.
All those are messages,
too. Intel, whatever my water bottle is, it's not a Stanley Cup. That conversation on another episode. This is a cheap TJ Maxx knockoff.
Mine is a Ball Mason jar, so.
Oh, yeah, how rustic.
How rustic. But yeah, so story is really... Story is a way that we remember things too.
Mm-hmm.
There's I should really remember what the actual study is, but the average person won't remember stats, but they can remember stories, and they mm-hmm. can remember how they felt. And part of the way that we do that is through a tool called narrative transportation. Mm-hmm. Narrative transportation, very simply, is how do you get people to visualize themselves in that setting? So what's funny is, as we talk about, if we want to bring it all the way back to that story about with Katie, is I was transported back to where I was.
Mm-hmm.
The vehicle I was in, the street I was on.
42nd Street. Probably driving past Target.
Yes. Well, I was driving past Target on 42nd Street. I was in my little like Grand Prix. I can see like the red letters on the
I had a Grand Prix. Like, I know exactly what the dash looks like.
Right. And I remember it was like early winter. So like what you're doing right there, because you can visualize yourself in this exact setting right now, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. By doing that, you are going to better remember my story about Katie, mm-hmm. right? And it's probably why it stuck in the first place. In addition to, you know,
it's my sister and I know how she talks. Yeah. And she often makes the joke that like the reason mom thought she was gay in high school and had no idea that I was queer was because my sister was the one standing in front of the closet door protecting it until I was ready to come out.
She's good people.
She's great people.
So that's why I love story.
Yeah, it's good. Well, I have one question left. It's the one I usually ask first, but I saved it to the end because we just hopped right in there. How have you received care this week?
That's a really good question. I was thinking about that and I was struggling with it as I read it. Mm-hmm. Because as a good Midwesterner, we don't focus on care of ourselves. We focus on care of others. You know, I think one thing that I have done this week as we came off of a holiday weekend, oftentimes I would play the role of family therapist a little bit. Mm-hmm. I have a brother and a sister-in-law and nieces and nephews and my parents. And I made the purposeful decision as we were going into that brunch time, like, take 3 breaths. You don't need to fix anybody in this time. You don't need to justify to anybody else, and you don't need to interpret anybody's conversation for each other. Because I know that's one like pattern that I get into quite a bit is I'm like, well, maybe they didn't mean this. Here's what they were actually saying, but they just don't have the words for it. And
you're the family translator.
Yeah. And I spend a lot of time and energy in that space. And it's one that I oftentimes don't mind being in because like, it's something that I'm not bad at doing. And I've done a lot of work for my work here at Tellwell and leading a team of 15 is like, you have to figure out how lots of different people talk and try to translate back and forth with what that is. But what I realized was I was taking my work home. And rather than playing that role to just like pause mm-hmm. and say, you know what? Literally everybody here is a grown adult. And they have the ability to do it themselves. And so that's how I show myself care.
That is fabulous. I love that for you.
Thanks.
That can be really hard to do when it's the thing we've done our whole lives.
It really is.
Yeah.
And I think one thing that I've always found fascinating is I've been told many a time that I get away with stuff that nobody else does. Whether that's like what I like the conversations that I can have with people. My father mm-hmm. says it to me all the time about my mother. Like, I could never say that to your mother. And
I can totally see that.
Yeah.
No, I can just see John saying that to you.
Yeah.
And it being true.
But here's where I think it comes from is I've never been really afraid of sharing, I'm going to say truths. Mm-hmm. But maybe more objective truths than mm-hmm. subjective, right? Like if you want to have an opinion about something, you can have an opinion about something, but I encourage you and challenge you to back it up. And if mm-hmm. you can't, then I just don't have as much respect for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because, with my parents living in Fargo now, I get to have dinner with them probably 2 or 3 nights a week. And that's mm-hmm. so fun. And what's also interesting is just how different our minds work
mm-hmm.
and like our different lived experiences. And I don't know if you watched the LSU-Iowa game just last night, a couple nights ago.
Dad and I watched part of it, yeah.
Okay. Was really interesting taking some of the commentary that they were kind of resharing that they had read on Twitter, that they had heard on SportsCenter or some of those different things and really challenging them to say like, actually, what you're sharing back is kind of implicit bias, or it's like, you know, it's what is the word for where it's like racism, kind of like microaggressions.
Oh, I guess.
And my mom so funny because she's just like, no, that's not true. And I was like, but it is. Like, if you look at this Iowa team, this much whiter team, you wouldn't say the same things about them. Well, they're nice. And I was like, okay, cool. Let's unpack that a little bit. And what I do appreciate about my parents and my relationship with them and the relationship that we've built is that they always come around to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that about them, because my mom was like, shut up. I know you're right. Okay, fine. We can move on. I have learned that I might be a little racist and I will work on it.
Yeah. That is one of the things about having, I think, adult relationships with our parents, because they're in proximity. I've been able to have a lot of that too. I make commentary on the TV a lot, and sometimes my parents are like, can we just watch the show? Okay. That's not how I watch TV, but okay. I will take notes and get back to you after.
You're going to do just a little recap.
I'm going to take you to school when this is done.
I love it.
Well, thanks for being here. I really appreciate the time you took. It's great to have you on the podcast, Max.
Elle, well, thank you. Thank you for not just inviting me on, but thanks for the work that you're doing in this podcast. I think these are really important conversations.
Oh, well, thank you.
More than that, they are creating that space to share story. And when we create that space to share story, really beautiful things can happen and really beautiful things can change. So thanks for making space for those stories.
Well, thank you. And thank you for doing the same with Pride Stories. Thank you for joining us on this episode of WHORF. To view the complete show notes and all the links mentioned in today's episode, or to get a full transcript of the episode, visit whorfpodcast.com. That's H-O-O-R-F podcast.com. Before you go, make sure you subscribe to the podcast so you can receive new episodes right when they're released. And if you're enjoying our podcast, I'd love to have you leave us a review in Apple Podcasts. Reviews are one of the major ways that Apple ranks their podcasts, so even though it only takes you a few seconds, it really does make a difference for us. Become a patron. For $3 a month, you can support the creation of this podcast, pay my editor, and join a community of fellow caregivers out here just doing our best. Thank you again for joining me, Elle Billing, in this episode of WHORF. Until next time, be excellent to each other. WHORF is hosted by Elle Billing at Elle and Wink. Audio editing by Ricky Cummings at Ricky Poo. Music composed by Ricky Cummings. WHORF is a production of Elle and Wink Art Studio, all rights reserved. WHORF Podcast can be found on social media channels at WHORF Podcast, at H-O-O-R-F Podcast.